This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support from the office of East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom. And the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757 and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Jeff Palermo producing today, and we begin with the esteemed pollster, Bernie Pinsonat, who's been doing his thing for a few generations in Louisiana, and Dr. Albert Samuels, longtime chair of the Political Science Department at Southern. He remains a professor of note, and they both know the lay of the land well, both locally and nationally. Later in the hour, we'll hear from Melissa Flournoy, but let's start with the national scene. We're 30 weeks away from an election. Donald Trump has twice received more votes than anybody in Louisiana history, and he is almost certainly going to carry our state, but can he come back? Right now, in the Real Clear Politics survey of battleground states, Trump is ahead in every one of them except Pennsylvania. Biden has forged ahead there narrowly. And in the national poll, now mind you, Trump has never gotten close in the overall vote. He lost by 3 million to Hillary Clinton, and he lost by 7 million to Joe Biden. The national poll right now has Trump at 46.2 and Biden at 45.9. So it's going to be a horse race, and Louisiana, of course, will likely follow the trend of the South. All the SEC states have twice gone for Trump, with the exception of Georgia, where Joe Biden nearly won 4 years ago. Again, 877-217-5757. Albert Samuels, I doubt that we'll see much of Trump or Biden during the election season. If the election were not decided by the Electoral College, it would be different. But the South is largely Trump territory now, and it hasn't always been that way. Bill Clinton carried Louisiana twice in 92 and 96. What's happened, Albert? Albert Samuels? Okay, we've lost Albert, so I'll ask it to Bernie Pinsonat. Bernie, do you know what's going on regarding the trend to the right in presidential elections?
Well, several things. Number one, Trump's policies have been, his positions have always been popular in the South. He's taken those and expanded them, his Supreme Court nominees, his positions on the border, his positions on taxes, his positions on foreign policy, anti-China, all of those things made him a stunning success here in Louisiana and most of the South. He's literally has no competition. I've never seen anything like him in Louisiana. You're right. The numbers he runs up in an election are mind-boggling. And we have a long way to go for the election. When you're talking about polls, you're talking about the margin of error. Can Trump win? I get that. I get asked every day. I don't know. I think it's too close to call. I think there's too much going to happen between now and then. Trump has his legal problems. Can he get past all of that? There are issues related to this election are not just political. We have the legal ramifications of all his problems by his supporters. I'll state it the way they say it, created by the Democrats. So, but it's a contentious race. It's very bitter. This country is very divided. It's about Trump saving the country and the Democrats. It's about Trump destroying the country. So that's the dynamic of this race. And at this point in time, I mean, you just can't have two candidates who are closer in the polls. I mean, it's literally a dead heat, and it remains that way.
Well, the former president does go on trial if things happen as they're planned, and we are 6 days away now, goes on trial in New York City, where he has not fared well. And the star witness is the pride of Baton Rouge, Stephanie Clifford, better known as Stormy Daniels. And it would seem a conviction would be possible. And if it were to happen, Trump would be running for president as a convicted felon who's appealing his conviction. Would that matter with his base and perhaps with swing voters, Bernie?
Well, the conviction in New York on the financial, related to his financial empire, obviously didn't affect him. Now we're moving into the criminal, a criminal trial, being convicted and becoming a felon, of course. But at this point in time, I would have to say no, just based on his following, based on his, but, you know, you only need to knock one or two points off in any state. These states,
these battleground states,
they're just so close, all of them. When Trump's ahead, well, he's ahead by 3 or 4 points. That's not really ahead. It's basically
within the margin.
The turnout decides, yeah,
that's
not
true,
not the poll.
Now we've got Dr. Samuels. Dr. Samuels, your thoughts about the staying power of former President Trump and whether, as the third consecutive election being the nominee of the Republican Party, he has the mojo to knock off the incumbent president. Albert Samuels?
Yeah, okay. First of all, good morning. I think I was having some difficulty hearing at first, but you were commenting on the staying power of the former president. It's a remarkable looking phenomenon. You know, because you would think that with the fact that he's been impeached twice, the fact that he led an insurrection against our government, and all of the indictments, just a fraction of some of the things that former president is accused of would have destroyed the typical politician, and yet in this uniquely polarized environment, he has at least a 50-50 chance of being reelected president. You know, if the polls we have right now are accurate.
Well, he has a committed base, and he has many committed lawmakers, and one of those is the pride of Lafayette, formerly of Baton Rouge. Clay Higgins used to work at Salisbury Dodge as a salesman for 10 years, and now he is a congressman from the great city of Lafayette. And in Friday's New York Times, a story from Luke Broadwater, even by a conspiracy theorist standards, the wild claims by Representative Clay Higgins, Republican of Louisiana, stand out. This week, in a lengthy podcast interview, he expounded at length on his belief, based, he said, on his own extensive investigation and evidence that only he has been able to see, that federal law enforcement officers entrapped Mr. Trump's supporters into violently attacking the Capitol on January 6th. Now, Bernie, Clay Higgins is a guy who he's bullish on the former president. And remember, he talked about these ghost buses, too. He definitely is indicating that he's not immune to going off script.
Now, putting it mildly, is that what I should say? Look, I read it. I was like, what? I read it with, and I've been doing this a long time. This is his approach to this story is quite unique. He's done the personal research himself. He has all the information himself, and none of it has been verified outside of, I guess you'd say, his scope of a way of thinking. So, I have no idea what to respond to something like that. He's a congressman. He's very popular in his district. The Trump thing in Louisiana allows him to do those type of things, by the way. I don't know if he could do it any place else. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. When it comes to those kind of stories, you mm-hmm. kick your seat back and you wonder, what's he talking about?
And a listener, Don in Mid-City, says he worked with Clay at Salisbury Dodge, and I responded, I bet he was a good salesman. He said, no, he was kind of middle of the pack. I would have thought he'd be a very good car salesman, full of personality, full of vim and vigor, and might be able to make some extravagant claims about how good the vehicle is, right?
Yeah, you would think so. But he was also he found his calling when he became a deputy, and St. Landry Parish. So he's had a varied path and career to get into Congress.
Well, Albert Samuels, Clay Higgins, some say Garrett Graves ought to run against him. And I'm of the mind, I've been convinced that if he went to Lafayette and ran against Clay Higgins, Garrett Graves would get trounced. He's very popular, Congressman Higgins is, in his home territory.
I guess that's one of the options that's been bandied about. Of course, some people also suggested that he should have also, he might have considered running against Jerry Ledlow. But, you know, he hasn't done either one of those things. You know, it seems right now that he's hanging his hat on running in his current district, and he's hoping that the new map gets thrown out.
Well, we'll talk about that. There is a trial that just began, a lawsuit. We'll hear from Dr. Samuels and Bernie Pinsonat after this. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and your number is 877-217-5757. A bit more time with Dr. Albert Samuels at Southern University and pollster Bernie Pinsonat. Dr. Samuels alluded to a trial that will decide the future of Louisiana's congressional representation. It began Monday in Shreveport. Three federal judges from the Western District are presiding as the trial comes months after a group of residents filed a lawsuit arguing the new congressional map the state legislature approved in January is an unconstitutional racial gerrymander because it divides communities of interest by creating a long, unwieldy district to create two majority black congressional districts. And the district in question is the sixth, although Julia Letlow's district under the new configuration goes all over the state. It's contiguous, as they all are. Mike Johnson's district also has a lot of parishes. But if previous decisions are any indication, it would appear that Garrett Graves is playing a bad hand. But Bernie Pinsonat, I'm told by people close to the congressman that he believes he's going to win and keep his district. What do you think?
You mean win the—
Win this case and that he'll run in his old district.
Yeah, well— I'm not so sure. I will say this. Jeff and the Attorney General Merrill feel strongly that they have the winning hand. He feels that he doesn't. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. And by the way, what if Garrett is successful? That'll be interesting to see who takes credit for being wrong. But I think Garrett feels he has no choice. That's his only option right now. He can run against Cleo Fields. I mean, he certainly can win, but it's an uphill battle. I think with the presidential this year, it'd be extremely difficult for Garrett.
Unless he could force a runoff. He'd have a lower turnout December race.
Everything about this congressional race is where you're creating these kind of districts.
Mm-hmm.
I've done them. I've been involved in them. And the turnout differential is everything. If you get into a turnout situation where there's not a lot of people voting, then the turnout dynamics works against you.
Mm-hmm.
In Louisiana, the average is about 5 or 6 points, white outvote blacks. Well, but in those things— In New Orleans, whites were winning elections in New Orleans when they were 63%. Why? Because whites were out voting.
Well,
the
and
black
also
20-30 points.
Lindy Boggs was an institution popular with black voters. Now, Garrett Graves isn't going to get many black voters to go for him, but the question is whether Cleo Fields can get many white voters to go with him. And the general consensus is that He already has a numerical advantage, and he does have some crossover appeal because the district includes some places like Baton Rouge, where this parish has become solidly blue. But I'm told, Dr. Samuels, that the Republicans are scurrying hard to find another Democrat to run against Cleo Fields to gum up the works, if you will, and force that December runoff. Is there a prospect or two out there who could make it more difficult for Senator Fields to return to Congress?
I can think of a couple of people, you know, who could potentially upset the apple cart. And think about it; it really wouldn't take that many votes to force a runoff. Because I mean, even though the district is going to be majority minority, but it's not overwhelmingly majority minority. So you know, so a candidate who can garner 5-10% of the vote could force a runoff.
Easy, yeah. I actually anticipate a runoff, but I also think even in a runoff, Senator Fields would be favored. But it gets more tricky, and there would be an enormous amount of money you can imagine invested, because we'll be one of the few, if any, states that has a runoff. Imagine if this seat, just hypothetically, determined which party controlled Congress, the kind of money that would be invested in Louisiana for that. Bill in Opelousas. Bill, you're on with Albert and Bernie. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, guys. I heard that you guys mentioned about Clay Higgins as the only representative in Louisiana. Well, Louisiana, the only state that will allow Clay Higgins to talk this nonsense. But you got a governor and a attorney general who have the same ideas as what Mr. Higgins is presenting. So when the government loses its integrity about the democracy is for the people, that's when we go wrong. And Cleo Fields is owned by Jeff Landry, so y'all can not mess with him, because Jeff Landry will sponsor him to get those white votes. Thank y'all.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Dr. Samuels, would you like to respond?
Well, you know, again, Clay Higgins' view, you know, well, you know, some people can question the colorful nature of his views, but, you know, it's not that far out of bounds here in right here, right now in Louisiana, which has now become a very ruby red state. You know, I mean, in fact, Governor Landry, as Attorney General, was one of the Attorney Generals who signed on to the effort to overturn the election. So Clay Higgins' viewpoints are not out of the mainstream right now of the Republican Party in Louisiana.
No, the delegation voted the same as Higgins on impeachment and on overturning the election. Garrett Graves has a voting record almost identical to Clay Higgins, but he's a different kind of personality, and he's not saying there were ghost buses involved in January 6th, but we're in a case in which Clay Higgins, if he wants to, and a listener notes, he runs for the Senate in 2 years. Bernie, we could be looking at Senator Higgins.
That, of course, that is a possibility, and you would think that it's, and I'm sure Democrats and others will say, "Well, Tim, Bernie, does he really have a chance?"
Like in a closed primary?
Oh, well, sure he does.
And he gets in a runoff with a Democrat?
Yeah. No. The question is, can he get enough votes to
beat Bill Cassidy
and keep him out of the runoff? Yeah, politically, I guess you'd say, you're looking at demographics. Yeah, it's possible. We're still 2 years away. Cassidy, I think, made a smart move by endorsing Jeff. I don't know if that has worked out for him yet.
Well, he's going to have some other work to do, as it appears. But
yeah, I think he has. I think he's in better shape because it's gotten further behind him. But you're still talking about.
I think a lot will depend on the presidential election. Yeah. If Trump's the president, we know he's not going to do anything to help Bill Cassidy, and he will do everything he can to hurt him. Carol in Jefferson. Carol, good morning. You're on with Bernie Pinsonat and Albert Samuels.
Yeah, on that topic, there's a whole lot to be exposed between now and November. For Albert, good to hear from you. Do we have any body that's not in politics that we could put in politics to get some good candidates? And if not, can I nominate you?
All right, please? Albert Samuels, are you going to get on a ballot? You might win.
Yeah, well, I like what I do actually at the university, so I'm not a candidate. But thanks for the compliment.
He's in the same. Doctor, you're in the same position as I am. We have fun doing this stuff, but every time we do one of these interviews, we make someone like us or dislike us.
There you go.
Doing what we're doing is much more fun than doing what those elected officials are doing. I think you would agree.
Paul in Opelousas. Right. Hello, Paul. You're on. Speak up, please.
I'm sorry. Good morning, Jim. Good morning to your guests. Just one question. We're all assuming that Cleo is the designated representative, but if anybody else of the African-American community considering running for that position.
38-year-old Rodney Gilliatt Jr. is charged with first-degree murder following the death of his infant daughter. Gilliatt allegedly physically abused the toddler, resulting in injuries to her torso, head, and lower body. Rapides Parish Sheriff spokesperson Tommy Cornline says 27-year-old Elisha Mazzaroli, the mother of the infant, was arrested for principal to first-degree murder.
She was allegedly had firsthand knowledge of the abuse and did not report it, did not get the child to any type of medical treatment, and did not report it to law enforcement.
Legislation to repeal vehicle inspection stickers hits a road bump. In House Appropriations Monday, Stonewall Representative Larry Bagley voluntarily pulled his bill at the request of state police. Bagley says LSP is not opposed to removing vehicle inspections. However, they do object as to how it will impact their budget.
I wouldn't be saying this with them behind me because they have guns and I don't. I'm pretty safe to say that they are in support once we can get everything straight.
LRN.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Melissa Flournoy on deck. We're wrapping it up with Bernie Pinsonat and Albert Samuels. And before we go to Melissa, who will talk largely about state politics and what's happening at the Capitol, Governor Landry is approaching 100 days, just over 3 months in office now, and he's been a busy bee, to say the least, and he's ventured into territory and taken on people that some might find surprising. He even took on Kim Mulkey and the national anthem. And Dr. Samuels, you're out at Southern University. You think all the kids at Southern are going to be standing for the anthem and be out there when it's played and all the various sports that are played on the bluff?
Well, that could be, that could be the issue, you know, if the governor really goes forward there. I'm not surprised by LSU's reaction to this, you know, but it's disappointing in my view. It's disappointing that Scott Robley had a better defense for LSU's women's basketball than Scott Woodard. But I'm not surprised, but it's weird. It's disappointing. They were in the locker room to pray. And the governor himself was at the game. Was at the round of 32 game, and somehow he didn't notice that the team was not on the court to do the national anthem. So he picked the 37th game of the year to make an issue out of this.
Yeah, well,
make an issue out of this.
I think you're talking about the games that were played in Baton Rouge, and the governor. It's also possible that he did not show until the game was already in progress. You know, governor's schedules are frenetic, and Jeff Landry is a guy who no telling what he's doing on a given day, but he probably has 15 appointments. But Bernie Pinsonat, Landry is acting as though he is invincible, and sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, he came in with not having a runoff. He didn't have to move as far to the middle as most governors do. And he ended up with a supermajority in the House and Senate, which no governor has ever been given that much power. The talk of him getting more power, I'm not so sure I understand why anyone would need more power than he has right now. A lot of this stuff, bills being filed, I don't know who's behind them. There are legislators who curry favor with the governor by filing these type bills. I haven't picked up anything that, I know Jeff wants to consolidate power. I know he thinks that he has to do this and he has to do that. And by the way, the more power he has, the easier it is to do it. I mean, you had a big vote yesterday on educational savings account, the Republicans got 71 votes. You're now moving into tort reform and other things. So then you got Scottish Convention. And Jeff's strength to get all this stuff done is important to him. So I'm not so sure that I disagree with he thinks he needs as much power as he can get. The question is, and I agree with you, at some point in time, somebody will start making enough noise where do we really want any governor to have that much power? I think he's smart enough politically to realize that you can only go so far with mm-hmm. that stuff, and then people start criticizing you, and you don't need that to happen. We'll mm-hmm. see. I think Jeff's a smart politician. The question is, can he figure out all this stuff and make sure it doesn't happen to him?
Well, let's see what happens. But I saw some people the other night in a room full of politicos, and to a person almost, they said, you know, he's just getting started. So we'll have some good radio shows. But Dr. Samuels and Bernie Pinsonat, we'll be calling on you as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And Melissa Flournoy is with us, longtime advocate for various causes. She is from the left side of the spectrum, a Democrat who was a state representative from the great hamlet of Shreveport. And yesterday, the legislature advanced a bill to ban transgender people from school bathrooms, domestic violence shelters, and other spaces that align with their gender identity. Despite warnings, the bill would put at risk millions of dollars in federal funding for those shelters. The House Criminal Justice Committee, actually the Civil Law Committee, agreed to advance House Bill 608 by Representative Roger Wilder of Denham Springs. It goes to the full House. It would require facilities to set aside bathrooms and sleeping areas for a specific sex, resembles so-called bathroom bills that have popped up in places around the country, mostly Republican hamlets. And Melissa Flournoy, this is no surprise, but you were there to express your dismay, your thoughts.
Well, hey, Jim, it's always great to be with you. And I just want to say that I do think Governor Landry's trying to do too much too fast. And he's, at some point he's going to figure out he doesn't have a mandate. He won with basically 18% of the voters in Louisiana. And so at some point I'm hoping folks will wake up and legislators will wake up and say, hey, you're going too fast. You know, this bill yesterday wasn't just about bathrooms. It was about all facilities. It included correctional facilities, domestic violence shelters, schools. And really, it was much more nefarious than that. It basically says transgender people don't exist in Louisiana, that there's no accommodation for anyone who identifies as transgender. You're going to be forced to go to restrooms, essentially, or accommodations based on your biological sex. And so one of the advocates called it the trans erasure bill. And a lot of this is driven by fear. And the narrative on the bill is creates the Women's Safety and Protection Act because, Jim, they're afraid of biological males, which are transgender women, somehow are a threat to the women in the state of Louisiana. So I just think it's overkill. Mm-hmm. I think it's too much. I think it's not well informed. And I think it's just inhumane because we do have transgender people here in Louisiana.
Well, what happens if a woman who is transitioned to a man and has a beard and wears a suit walks into the women's restroom as this law would mandate?
Well, you know, that's sort of what I talked about yesterday because, you know, I have worked with a number of young transgender people, some of them transgender males, who you would think those were just young college guys. You would never, you know, the idea that they were transgender wouldn't even hit in your mind. And so this bill would make those young people who are biologically female at birth use the women's restroom. So I think it creates more problems. I think it's a terrible idea. I don't think they really thought this through. You know, I personally don't think people who are transgender women are a threat. Those are folks that are just trying to do their best to live their best life. And there are no examples of transgender people being aggressive or victimizing anyone. You know, that's the creepy old white guys, the coaches, the priests, the ministers, you know, the pedophiles. You know, it's not the transgender people that we really need to be worried about.
Not every
about,
priest or minister or old white guy is a pedophile, though. But
oh, no, I didn't mean to suggest that they all were. But you know what I'm trying to say. I mean, we're making boogeymen. We're making boogeymen out of people where and creating, you know, hardships for individual people. And frankly, there's not a million transgender people in Louisiana. It just seems like let's just go out of our way to make life harder for people who are just trying to live their best life. It makes me sad.
877-217-5757. There is no issue off limits, and there is so much legislation, it's hard to keep track. And just this week, I can count at least six bills that involve sex and gender. There's gay marriage legislation, isn't there, Melissa?
Well, this is culture war week for me. I mean, I think when you think about sort of what the agenda is, you know, yesterday we had this transgender bill. Mandy Landry had a bill trying to find a way to acknowledge and codify same-sex marriage in the Constitution. That went nowhere. Today, there was a contraception bill scheduled trying to protect the right to contraception. Tomorrow, in the Education Committee, there are bills to deny the parental rights of parents of transgender kids who want to use a different pronoun than the pronoun that matches with their sex on their birth certificate. There's the Don't Say Gay bill, so nobody in schools can talk about gender identity, which frankly includes, you know, a married heterosexual woman wouldn't be able to talk about her husband and her kids either. It's just much ado about chaos. And then we've got an employment non-discrimination bill trying to protect the rights of LGBTQ people. So, you know, there seems to be a lot of I don't want to say hysteria and hate, but none of this makes life better for anybody in Louisiana. None of this improves public education. None of it makes kids safer. None of it creates jobs. You know, if anything, it just demonstrates to the outer world that Louisiana is practically trying to be Alabama. In terms of this culture war, you know, they're coming for IVF, they're coming for contraception. You know, Jim, it's just enough to make your head spin.
All right. Well, you're on a roll, Melissa. We'll talk about some of these, including a contraception bill that is bound to draw attention that I think is being heard today. So your number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, and your number is 877-217-5757. Melissa Flournoy is with us, and the former state representative notes that there are many bills this week, she's calling it Culture War Week, that are in the offing at the Capitol, and the one we mentioned is the so-called contraception bill. What would this one do, Melissa?
Well, you know, this started out as a really simple bill, just basically to say contraception is legal in Louisiana. And I think they're going to delay the bill for another week, because what we're finding out is that there are a lot of Republican legislators that don't think contraception should be legal. And after what happened in Alabama with IVF and some of the concern at the national level, this bill was basically just saying that we would codify the rights of women and men to access contraception in Louisiana. But it's taken on a whole new life. I think they're going to push the bill for another week to hear it, because I'm shocked to find out that a lot of people in our legislature are not in support of contraception, that have real concerns about IUDs and other methods of contraception. And you know, it's 2024, Jim. If we're going to outlaw abortion, we ought to really make sure that people are knowledgeable about how to take care of themselves, how to prevent pregnancy. I mean, gosh, we ought to be having access to contraception, you know, in every health clinic in the state. And so, you know, it's just shocking to sort of see the turn of events on how simple legislation really is getting caught up in this culture war.
Well, I'm sure based on motives and moves by the legislature that with the Ten Commandments apparently going in every classroom and every one of these lawmakers adhering to them, that the 144, all the members of the legislature would never have sexual relations other than to procreate, Melissa.
Well, Jim, I'm not even gonna swing at that pitch because you know that good people come down to to the legislature and oftentimes lose their balance. There's just too much opportunity for liquor, alcohol, and mischief, and we've seen a lot of good people wreck their marriages, their families, and their careers at the state capitol. And so, yeah, I would think these guys would be all for contraception. And so it's just a strange, strange time. And this idea of a performative Christian culture war really does no one any good. Let's solve problems. Let's help young people not be pregnant. Let's address maternal health. Let's have healthy babies. Let's support women. But no, we want to waste time with this sort of, you know, hysteria. And it's just so aggravating because Louisiana's 50th in maternal health. We have one of the highest teen pregnancy rates.
Okay.
We have issues around access to health care.
Well, let's go to some calls. In the immortal words of Flip Wilson, the devil made me do it. 877-217-5757. James in Metairie. James, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Hello, Melissa. This topic of contraception that is she has just resurfaced. There's an overriding principle, I believe, that I've observed reading, listening to these evangelical zealots, and that is they believe it is not possible to separate sex from reproduction, from procreation. That is unnatural. It's stupid. It has no basis in reality. It's like saying you cannot separate eating from nourishment. Okay, well, you want to eat popcorn all day, eat cotton candy all day? That's not nourishment, but
okay.
It's eating.
All right.
Well, now here's the deal. They just would prefer for women to be, you know, barefoot, pregnant, and in the home with no rights, no autonomy, no ability to make their own decisions. It's just fascinating. We're trying to turn the clock back and not acknowledge sort of the bodily autonomy of people in the 21st century. I think contraception is a right. I think access to health care is a right. I think IVF is fantastic. I have a number of friends who've had babies through IVF. You know, we ought to be lifting up medical science to make our lives healthier.
Well, Howland Monroe says a Democrat, a woman, Katrina Jackson, who's still there, she is often totally on the other side of you on these issues, Melissa.
Yes, that's true.
Well, that just shows there is a different point of view. And in Louisiana, I suspect there are many women. Well, you know, we only had one woman on the ballot October 14th for governor in Sharon Hewitt. I'm not sure she got 1% of the votes, and most of the voters are women. What do you make of this, Melissa?
I think Sharon Hewitt did not run to her best campaign. I think she's a smart woman. I think she should have campaigned more as a woman and really reached out more to the Republican women. I mean, I have a lot of strong feelings on the governor's race in the fall. But now, I'm not suggesting that all women agree with me. I am the board chair of 10,000 Women Louisiana. We think there are women across the state of Louisiana that do think that abortion should be legal, do believe in contraception, do believe in bodily autonomy, do believe that we need to improve health care and access to education, that human rights and women's rights are all the same thing. And so, yeah, I do feel like that there's a progressive network of people across Louisiana. They just haven't gotten organized effectively to fight back at an electoral level yet.
Amy on I-12. Amy, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, I had a question. When we're talking about this bill that's regarding contraception, are we also considering how contraception is used for health care? So not only do individuals in their reproductive years use contraception to prevent or to prevent pregnancy, but then also as women age, they're using that as a form of hormone replacement in dealing with menopause. Is any of this coming up with our legislators?
Well, you're absolutely right. And also adolescent young women use contraception for management of their menstrual cycles, acne, other PCOS, other issues as well. Mm-hmm. You know, contraception and hormonal replacement therapy are valid and important parts of the healthcare regimen for women in Louisiana, and that we need to have access. It needs to be safe and regulated. And we need to talk about this as access to healthcare.
Listener Tom on Bluebonnet notes that many of these conservative lawmakers are against condoms, and condoms prevent sexually transmitted diseases in most cases, and they also prevent unwanted pregnancies in most cases. So why wouldn't there be a push for condom use?
Oh, my God, I think there ought to be a condom in every pocket, Jim. I mean, listen, we've got the highest HIV rates in the country. Syphilis is a huge issue in Louisiana. Sexually transmitted diseases. Any young man in the state, any man in the state of Louisiana should be protecting themselves from sexually transmitted diseases if they're in any kind of a non-monogamous relationship. But we've got to talk about these issues in a real way with accurate information. I wish we had health education in the schools. It's astonishing how little young people understand about their bodies and about reproduction and about their own health care. But you can't talk about sex ed in Louisiana.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Now that Trump has changed his opinion on abortion, I'm sure for selfish personal reasons and his political ambition, now I'm sure organizations like the Louisiana Family Forum would think abortion is murder. So how can these conservative pro-life people support Donald Trump, who would allow states to murder the unborn? Isn't that hypocritical and inconsistent of their own beliefs?
All right. Well, Trump is trying to take the middle ground on this now, and it's going to be hard to pull off. But Melissa, your thoughts about whether Gene Mills and Ben Clapper should be pounding away at Donald Trump for saying abortion is appropriate in some cases, and that if states want to have abortion rights, they should be allowed to have them.
Well, you know, Donald Trump is a hot mess, in my opinion. I can't imagine how any practicing Christian of any values of faith and conscience and concern could actually support Donald Trump. It's just unbelievable to me on abortion and any number of issues. So I don't even know how to respond to that question. Because it's just unbelievable to me to see that former President Trump still has the support of evangelical Christians, given his personal behavior, his flip-flopping on issues that are important to them, and his total lack of character.
All right. Well, don't you think that's because if a Supreme Court position were to open, let's say Clarence Thomas retires, or something were to happen to one of the three Democrats remaining, that Trump would almost certainly put a pro-life Republican justice on the court?
Yes, and I think that's a terrible justification to vote for such a flawed man.
Well, next week it's Stormy Daniels. She'll have her biggest show of all time as the star witness in the hush money case in New York City. Predictions, Melissa Flournoy?
You know, it's interesting to see that this is the case that's making it to the finish line. I just watched the Netflix documentary on Stormy Daniels. She's a very sympathetic character. I hope that Donald Trump gets what he deserves.
All right. Well, thank you, Melissa Flournoy. We'll be following the pride of Baton Rouge, Stephanie Clifford, former star at the Gold Club, now the Penthouse Club, and the star witness against Donald John Trump, former president of the United States of America. Back tomorrow, same time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.